the Gemara has a discussion about what the source is for the halacha of Hilchim Achar Haroiv, the halacha that we follow the majority. And the Gemara slightly narrows it down and it says that some cases where we follow the majority, the source is Pashut, but other cases, the source is not Pashut. Which cases is the source puts Pashut in? So first the Gemara tells us that the source is Pashut in a case where it's a Ruba De'isa Kamon. Like the Sanhedrin, you just take a head count and you follow the majority. Or like a case where you find a piece of meat lying on the floor and you don't know whether it's kosher or treif, so you just count up the number of butcher shops, and if there's more kosher butcher shops than treif butcher shops, so that we assume that the meat is kosher. So this is called a Ruba De'isa Kamon, something which can be verified by an immediate and physical, concrete act of counting. The Gemara is bothered, what about a case of Ruba De'isa Kamon? What's the source that we follow the Rove when it's a Ruba De'isa Kamon? And even there, the Gemara splits up into two cases. One case that the Gemara discusses is Hecha De'efshur, a case where it is impossible to verify by means of any other evidence what the status of the object in question is, and in that case the Gemara brings down a number of Makoros, a number of sources about how we know that we follow the Rove in a case where it's E.F. Shalavarer in any other way. The Gemara leaves open, however, the question of what is the source for following a Rove in a place where it's E.F. Shalavarer, when it's possible to find out in some other way. What is the case of E.F. Shalavarer, where it's impossible to find out what the status is in any other way? The Gemara says we have no way of knowing when you shecht an animal whether the knife cut the animal's neck precisely at a point where there was already a hole which rendered the animal a treif. There's no way to tell. So in that case, the Gemara says it's pashut that we rely on Ruv because the Torah tells us that shechita works. On the other hand, what about a case where it's Efshar Levarer Binyan Acher, such as a question about whether the animal which was shechted has some sort of a hole in the membrane that surrounds its brain, a nekev bikrum shel moach. So under those circumstances, the Gemara says, we don't know, maybe you actually have to uncover that membrane and check whether it has a hole or whether it doesn't have a hole. So the Gemara leaves it open. And there's actually four different approaches in Rishonim for how to deal with this open-ended sugya, in terms of what is the source for relying on a rove when it's Efshar Levarer in other manners. So the first approach amongst the Rishonim is espoused by Rabbeinu Gershom and also attributed to the Rebbeim of Rashi, which is unsurprising because they all belong to that French tradition. And that approach basically is to say that we do not rely on Rove. The Gemara starts out by asking, how do we know that you can rely on Rove? And the Gemara modifies and explains that the question is, how do you know that we can rely on Rove when it's Efshar Levarer in other circumstances? And Rabbeinu Gershom says, the Gemara's conclusion is that it shrugs its shoulders and it says, I don't know how you can rely on Rove. There's no source for it. So therefore, clearly, we have to revise the premise of the question. The question assumed that you can rely on Rove even when it's Efshar Levarer, but we have to question that premise. Indeed, we have to conclude that you cannot rely on Rove when it's Efshar Levarer. And therefore, based on this, we should paskin that when an animal is shechted, you have to check. There's 18 different things which can make the animal into a treifa, and you should have to check for every single one of those 18 things, which would be an incredibly laborious task for all of the shochtim and the menachrim, the people who are in charge of certifying the kashrus of animals. Nowadays, we don't check this because we don't follow the psak of Rabbeinu Gershom, we follow the psak of the other Rishonim, but if Rabbeinu Gershom was correct, it would mean that in order to certify that meat is kosher, you would have to check the animal for every single passable wound which could render it a treifa, which is a very laborious process. This is the opinion of Rabbeinu Gershom. Rashi, however, both here and later on, as Rabbi Kiva Eger in the Gilyon Ashas points out, espouses a different opinion. Rashi writes that when there's three possible sources. One source, which I don't want to discuss too much at length, but one source that Rashi brings down This is halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, that this is a tradition that Moshe Rabbeinu got at Har Sinai, that you can rely on Rov even when it's passable to clarify with other more definite investigations. And this possibly can lead to some difficulties because we know that there are certain rules that govern when something could be a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, when it can't be a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. One of those rules is that there's not supposed to be any dispute pertaining to matters which are purportedly halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, and yet this principle of relying on Rov seems to be disputed by Rabbeinu Gershom. So how can it be a true halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai? Furthermore, does the Gemara ever mention halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai is a possible source for this? We know that the Rambam, in his listing of halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, certainly omits this, and presumably Rabbeinu Gershom would applaud that omission. So this is a Shita and Rashi which raises some interesting questions in terms of the rules that govern halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, but doesn't shed so much light per se on the rules which govern the reliability of a rov in terms of clarifying the suffix. Okay, what are the other two opinions of Rashi? The other two opinions of Rashi are going to be much more insightful, will grant us a lot more insight into the dynamics and the mechanics of how Rove works. One opinion that Rashi brings down is that we derive the ability to be somich on Rove in Ruba Delisa Kamon from a case of Ruba Deisa Kamon. Remember, Ruba Deisa Kamon is when you can verify with a head count. Ruba Delisa Kamon is when you can't verify with a head count. It's some sort of an abstract statistic rather than a concrete statistic. So Lichora, what exactly is it that makes this Teretz of Rashi unique? So I think that you can answer the following. There's a Chakira that we asked already in Maseches Zvachim about the principle of Holchim, of saying Holchim Achar HaRov, or called a Parish Meruba Parish. The Chakira is as follows. We know that there are two distinct halachos, or what seem to be two distinct halachos, which govern Rov. One halacha is called bittel b'rov, and that is when you have a majority, let's say, of kosher and a minority of treif, and they all belong to the same species. So then we say that the minority of treif turns into kosher. That's bittel b'rov. So that's one halacha. It seems like almost like magic that the identity of the minority ingredient becomes null and void, or at least it becomes subsidiary to the identity of the majority ingredient. This is the halacha of bittel b'rov. Then there's a second halacha, which is not such like a magical transformation of the identity of one ingredient. Rather, it's more like a statistical probability that it's called a holchem achar harov. Holchem achar harov simply means that if we have to decide when something leaves a mixture, whether it comes from the majority component of the mixture or a minority component, it's statistically more likely that it comes from the majority. So that's called Holchim Achar Haruv. The Shaila that we asked in Maseches Zvachim is whether or not these two dinim really both stem from the same din. In other words, can we say that the reason that we're able to be Holich Achar Haruv is because there is some extent of bittel b'rov, because in order for something to be considered a mixture, it doesn't necessarily have to all be touching one another and mixed up with one another. As long as there's some affinity, some commonality between all these different components, they qualify, they count as a mixture, even if the components are in different houses, maybe even if they're in different cities. As long as they all belong to the same general suffix. So therefore, it's possible that when we say Holchim Achar Harov, there is some element of Bittel Barov involved as well. In other words, that we say, not only is there a statistical probability, but there's also to some extent a nullification of the identity of the minority, wheresoever it may be, which is partially what allows us to be more lenient in assuming that whatever is in front of us actually belongs to the majority ingredient. It's like saying it probably belongs to the majority, and even if it only belongs to the minority, it still kind of loses its identity to the majority. Okay, so that all applies to Aruba, the Issa Kaman. It applies to Aruba, the Issa Kaman, because there, the majority is concrete, the majority is in front of you. There's 10 butcher shops, there's 10 Dayanim who are voting one way, and the minority is in front of you, so we can treat it as all one big mixture, and we can say that the minority ingredient loses its identity, clapping the majority ingredient. But when it comes to Aruba, the Lisa come on, so then you can't say that anymore, because in Aruba, the Lisa come on, the majority ingredient is not here. For example, the Gemara's case of Aruba, the Issa come on, Aruba, the Lisa come on, is a question about whether a katan who's about to perform chalitza, or a ketan who's about to perform chalitza, do we have to be concerned that they belong to the minority of ketanim who are not capable of performing chalitza because they'll ultimately grow up and become serisim or ilanios? Or do we say that no, they belong to the majority of ketanim who will grow up and become healthy, mature adults? This is, rov of ketanim will grow up into mature adults, and mid of ketanim will turn into serisim and ilanios. So do we have to worry that the katan who's in front of us right now is going to grow up and not turn out to be a mature adult who's capable of performing chalitza? This is a machlokas, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in Maseches Yevamos. But here, what's the rov and what's the miut? The rov is not all of the ketanim who are here in front of us today. The rov is all ketanim from the time of Adam HaRishon until Yemos HaMashiach. So that we can't say that a miut of ketanim is batel to the rov of ketanim under this type of a circumstance. You can only have a miut which is batel to the rov. When the rov is present and the miut is present, so then we can say that they all form a gigantic mixture, and that the miut, it becomes batel to the rov. But in this case, we're not talking about a ruba de'isa kaman, which can be mevatel the miut. So therefore, this idea of bittel berov is not going to be relevant to ruba delesa kamon. The only aspect of rov which is relevant to ruba delesa kamon is the aspect of statistical probability. So I believe that as follows. If Rashi is correct when he claims that the source for holchem achar harov by ruba delesa kamon is that we just learned that from Ruba de'isa kamon, then that suggests to us that Ruba de'isa kamon is not a function of Bittel Barov. Because if Ruba de'isa kamon was a function of Bittel Barov, then there would be no way of drawing any comparison between that and Ruba de'isa kamon. I would tell you, Ruba de'isa kamon cannot be the source of Ruba de'isa kamon, because Ruba de'isa kamon makes a lot of sense that we should follow the rov. And the reason it makes a lot of sense is because not only is there a statistical probability, but there's also the fact that the miut is losing its identity to the rov, wheresoever the miut happens to be and the rov happens to be. But in the end of the day, it's all a gigantic mixture, because all the particles have something in common with one another, and therefore the miut can be bottled to the rov. Masha inkin ruba delisa kamon, where there is no musik of bittel, it's impossible for it to be bottled. So the fact that Rashi seems to think that there's a possible source for Ruba de Lisa Kamon in Ruba de Isa Kamon suggests to us that Ruba de Isa Kamon is not a function of Bittel, it is purely a function of statistical probability, just like Ruba de Lisa Kamon. That's what we see from this comment of Rashi. The fourth Shita and Rishonim, and the third possible source for following the Rov when it's Makom Sheh, Efshar Levar Aydein Yanim Achirim, is quoted by Rashi later on, I believe on Daf Nun Aleph Amud Beis, and that is that we learn out that we follow Rov in a situation where it is Efshar Levarer from the fact that we follow Rov in a situation where it's E Efshar Levarer. And I'm running out of time, but very briefly, what's the significance of this? We can generally ask the following question. When a person relies on a Rov, is he basically like relying on the evidence of Ki'ilu that he saw its status with his own eyes? Or is Rov simply one piece of evidence? It doesn't actually resolve the uncertainty. The uncertainty remains, and Rov is just a piece of evidence which belongs in our dossier or in our portfolio of pieces of evidence which can help us resolve the uncertainty. Now, it could be argued that a person is not allowed to rest as long as there's an uncertainty which remains. He's not allowed to rest until he's gathered all the evidence that bears on on resolving this uncertainty. If any piece of evidence is missing, then he has to go out and be a detective and find that missing piece of evidence, and he shouldn't reach a conclusion with an incomplete amount of evidence. That's a very sensible argument, and that would explain the position of Rabbeinu Gershom very well. It would explain that in a case where it's EF Shalavara, meaning where you have all the evidence in front of you, and that evidence consists of a rove, so then you can follow the rove. But when some of the evidence is missing, so then you have to gather the remaining evidence. You can't just rely on a rove. You have to gather all the evidence until you know with certainty. Either you have to know with certainty, or you have to gather all the passable evidence. That's the sheet of Rabbeinu Gershom. If that were the case, so it wouldn't make any sense to learn out a case of Efshel Avarer from a case of Efshel Avarer. By Efshel Avarer, you've satisfied your obligation, you haven't been lazy, you've done your footwork, and you've gathered all the evidence, and that's why you're allowed to rely on it. In a case of Efshel Avarer, you're missing some evidence, so you can't rely on it. How can Rashi say that we learn out Efshel Avarer from Efshel Avarer? How can he learn out cases where there's still pieces of evidence to be gathered from cases where there's no evidence left to be gathered? So to that, I believe that Rashi thinks that Rove is a much stronger piece of evidence than anything else. And that once you have a Rove, it's not simply one piece of evidence amongst many pieces of evidence. What a Rove does is it tells you as if you saw it with your own eyes. You're allowed to rely on it with absolute certainty. And therefore, Rashi is going to tell you that it can serve as a source for even when there's still pieces of evidence missing. Because when you see it with your own eyes, you don't have to gather any other evidence. You saw it. So the same thing, when you have a rove, the reason that rove works when it's Efshel Avarer is because it's as if you saw it with your own eyes. And therefore, rove is going to work just as well when it's Efshel Avarer, because once you saw it with your own eyes, you don't have any obligation to gather further evidence. I think there's other ways to understand this last pshat in Rashi and Machlokas with Rabbeinu Gershom, but for now, I think that this is a sufficient pshat to suffice. And generally, we call this whether rove is Mevarer for us, whether it clarifies, it sheds light and reveals the contours of the truth, or whether rove is simply a hanhaga, it's something which dictates to us how we should act in cases of uncertainty, but does not actually totally resolve the uncertainty. Yeshua. Wow.